Well, we're doing a new perek now, perek Elunaris. Nominally the main subject of this perek in the beginning of next, is the matter of onus and mefateh. The Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah talks about mefateh, a man seduces a girl, a nara, to have relations with him. And the choice, either he has to marry her, maris marana loy leisha. If one or the other of them doesn't want to, we'll learn later in the parak that either of them has the choice to refuse, then he pays her kesef yishko kamayr absolus, he pays her a fine. And we'll talk about later in the parak whether on top of that fine, whether he pays, what else he pays. Besides a fine for having seduced her, there's also the fact, for example, there's nezek, that now as a bo'ula she's worth less than absola. There may be tzar, actually there isn't with mefateh, we'll talk about that later. Well, no, mefateh means that it was consensual.
Well, then why?
But still, we hold him at fault for having seduced her into it.
But why don't we hold her also at fault?
Because, I mean, the main... First of all, I mean, we're talking about over here. She's a naira. She's been 6 months of bas mitzvah. If she's older than that, actually, we're going to learn that there is no knas anyway. These various dinim don't apply. But the usual assumption is that the man is the one is the one responsible. He's the one who talked her into it. She agreed to it, fine. But he's the one who talked her into it. And we don't want that. B'nai Yisrael should be treated as hefker.
I understand, but why is mefateh different than ones?
Ones is all his fault, and therefore that's the next thing, actually.
Right.
So with ones, so let's talk about ones a second, and then ones is described in Parshas Kisei. Say there you have that he has to marry her, which is to say, well, he doesn't have a choice. She or her father still has a choice in the matter, but he doesn't have a choice, even as we'll learn later in the parak, even if she's ugly, even if she's disfigured, etc. He's never allowed to divorce her, and he has to pay the knas. And he has to pay the knas as well as the nezek and tsar and so forth. So you're asking, so you're asking why in the case of mefateh, why we don't penalize her? The pashtus, I guess, the reason would be because he's the one who talked her into it. So,
but you say it's consensual.
It is.
If it's consensual, both agreed. Even if you started, but both agreed.
Which is a minor.
No. If she was a ketana, we're going to talk about whether there's a knas, but a naira we're talking about over here, but still. Yeah.
But then if she's a minor, then consent doesn't...
So, no, we did talk about before, and we'll go through as we go further into it, pita ketana onus, too, that in fact, by ketana, the law of asmitzah, there really is no such thing as pitri, if the pitri would be considered onus, statutory rape. No, we're talking about over here about a naira. We're talking over here about within 6 months of her, within 6 months after her bas mitzvah, within 6 months after puberty. So she's able to give consent. Right. Okay, but since he's the one who initiated it, the pashtus, and after all, what are we saying, really? We're saying like this when you think about it. We're making him marry her, so that the chinuch says for one thing that way, you're not going to have. She's going to, and if she marries somebody else, he may in time to come he may make fun of her. You sleep around or whatever like this. If she marries the guy who seduced her in the first place, then that avoids that issue. If not, well, then you have the fact he made her worth less in marriage. He made it that her ksuba is going to be less, as we learned in the first parak. But Ula only gets 100, the ksuba gets 200. So therefore, we make him pay for the difference, the kesef yishko kamarad absulus, the knaf, makes up for that, kind of.
No, we have to agree.
Right.
He pays, but she doesn't pay anything, and she was part of the decision.
Okay, but what's she supposed to do? She can't very well pay him. It's not like he's damaged anything by this. A knas means a fine. So nominally this parak in the beginning of next all talk about these dinim of onus and mefateh. We're going to have it. In a large part of the parak is going to be a digression on the topic on the topic of kamloi b'dirabamineh, which we'll let's learn the Mishnah and then explain that a little bit. Mishnah says, Elu naris yeshlan knas. The following naris have a knas. If you're onus or mafata, as the case may be, then there's a knas. The Gemara in Sanhedrin actually talks about the possibilities. Are we talking about over here in our Mishnah? Are we talking about onus, or are we talking about mafata, or maybe both? Anyway, habala mamzeres, number one, if the girl was a mamzeres, ba'ala nesina. Nesina is, we've learned before, is a girl descended from the Givonim, where we learned that they're also lava gakal. And here you have, this is the major place where Rashi and Tosfos have a major machloikas on the subject. Under what grounds are these nesinim osir? Now, what we're going to explain in the Gemara, when we start listing off over here, mamzeres, nesina, and the rest of them, we're not saying, obviously, if we have a regular girl, a regular bas yisrael, who's not a mamzeres and not a nesina, obviously there's a knas with them also. Well, the Mishnah is telling us that even cases where the girl is possible, where they otherwise wouldn't be able to get married because there's an issur lav or whatever on it, nevertheless, you still owe them the knas. We'll talk about that on Amud Beis.
That's really interesting to him.
Right. Well, right. So we're saying, in other words, the way the Torah is phrasing it is he's supposed to marry her, and if he doesn't marry her, he has to pay the knas. You would think, and again, we'll talk about it on Amud Beis, you would think then that if he's not able to marry her because she's also to him under a lav or what have you, then he shouldn't have to pay the knas either. No, our Mishnah is telling us that not. So the question is, basically, under what grounds is the nesina also to him? So Rashi says it's drabanan. We learned back in Yevamos a few months ago that the whole story with David HaMelech, how the Givonim proved themselves to be very cruel. They demanded seven people from Shaul's family to be hanged. Instead of accepting some other kind of compensation for having lost their parnasa, etc. So therefore, David announced that they're also lover b'kal, that they're also to marry into the Jewish people. So Rashi over here is saying that it's derabanan. Tosfos discusses it at some length over here, the first Tosfos over here, and says, "What are you talking about? All the things we're talking about in our Mishnah are cases where he's not allowed to marry her d'oraisa." The mamzeres, you're not allowed to marry d'oraisa. The kusis, which is the next case that we're going to talk about. So the nesina also has to be that it's also d'oraisa.
You know, didn't exist d'oraisa, did it?
No, but another.
You're so, saying since David
Amar. No. Because the history of the nesinim goes back to Yoshua. In Sefer Yoshua, it tells how the nesinim, the people of Givon, had tricked the Jewish people, claiming that they're from a faraway country. The Jewish people made a peace treaty with them, and then when it turned out that they're from the seven nations, and they couldn't kill them because of Mechachil Hashem. So Tosfos' argument basically is that the nesinim are actually also d'oraisa because the Torah says that the Torah says on the seven nations, lo tischat and bam, you're not allowed to marry them. So in that case, they're also d'oraisa. What are we talking about over here? What did David add? David added basically that they're going to be slaves to the Jewish people forever. Yeshua had said that they're going to be slaves as long as the Beis Hamikdash is standing. David added forever, and once they're slaves, then automatically they're not going to mix with the Jewish people.
Being slave is derabanan.
So being the slaves forever is derabanan, but being also to marry them is derabanan. There's a couple of different explanations what Rashi might answer to that. One possibility I think that Pnei Yeshua brings up is there might be a difference between the first generation of Nesinim and the future generations. Maybe the first generation is also Daraisa, and the subsequent ones are only also Darabanan. Or another possibility is there might
be slaves forever.
No, but in other words, so Rashi would be saying over here, when do we say that it's also d'oraisa to have relations with the Nesinim? That's the first generation, the ones who came and tricked Yoshua, their descendants for over the centuries would only be also d'rabbanan. Another possibility is actually they talk about the possibility that when we're saying if the Isser is loy tischaten b'am, they're not allowed to marry them. Well, here in our Mishnah, we're not talking about marriage; we're talking about having relations with them. Maybe that wouldn't be also. I mean, it would be also under, according to the Rambam, under Lo Yekdesha. That's a different issue. But you wouldn't have the Isser of Lo Tischaten Bam, the Isser of not marrying them, because you're not marrying them. So therefore, you might argue. So therefore, you could argue that as well. But that's the distinction, that to marry them would be also Zaraisa. To have relations with them would be also Zerabonim. So that's on Valentina. Valakusis, also if a person is onus or mafata, a kusis. The kusim are the nations, we've learned about this before also, they're the nations which Sancheirav imported into Eretz Yisrael after he exiled the ten shvatim. They came there. They were idol worshippers. They started being attacked by lions. They realized that when you're in Eretz Yisrael, you have to behave like a Jew. So they learned about Torah and Mitzvahs. The pasuk says they continued worshiping their idols. Throughout the time of the second Beis Mikdash, there was a machloikus in halacha. What do we say? Was there gerus sincere or not? Are they geirim emes? They're true geirim, or are they geirim arayis? They're only geirim because of the fear of the lions.
They were Bavli.
They were from different places in Bavel, Kosa, whatever. They're called Kosa because Kosa was one of the cities that they came from. The upshot of it is eventually, the Gemara mentions in Chulin that in the times of Reb Meir, so you're talking like 100 years after the Churban Bayis Sheni, they discovered that these Kosim are still worshipping Avodah Zarah. And then at that point, they declared them outright Goyim, and that's how the halacha is nowadays. But our Mishnah is talking about before that, so therefore you still have the question, are they Geire Emes or Geire Arayis? So Rashi said that they're Geire Arayis. They're only Geirim because of the lions, so they're not really full-fledged Geirim. Therefore, we have the same issue. Lo tishchatin bam, you're not allowed to marry them. Because they were being attacked by lions, and that's why they, and it was because of the fear of that they converted. Arayas. Not Arayas with an ayin as in Gilei Arayas, but Arayas is in the plural of Ari. Tosfos again argues with that and says that actually no, we could even be going according to the opinion in our Mishnah. The Mishnah could even be talking about according to the opinion that they're Geirei Emes. But the problem is that the problem is that you might have thought you shouldn't give them the knas because you shouldn't pay her the money because as we learned in the first parak, you don't want her to go and be enjoying it as a goy when she doesn't have the right to write to it under goyish law. And here the idea is that there are avodim and shvachas mixed in among these kosim. So you don't know really who's who, what lineage she has. Anyway, so those three cases so far, mamzeres, nesina, and kosis, even though each of them has some kind of psul, there's some kind of reason why you're not allowed to marry them, daraita or derabanan, as the case may be. Nevertheless, you still have to pay the knas. Next group, Habala Giyuris Vala Shvoya Vala Shivcha Shiniftu Shinisgaru Vinishtahru Khosis Libnais Shalashana Biamechad. If the person has relations with a Giyuris, a convert, or Shvoya, a girl who was taken captive, as we learned in the previous parak, or Shivcha, a maidservant, which Shiniftu, they were redeemed, or Shinisgaru, or converted, Vishinishtahru, or freed from slavery, Khosis Vibas Shalashana Biamechad, when they were below 3 years and a day old, which, as we've learned before, any bia that happens below three is considered, in halacha, we consider it that the psulim grow back. She's still considered a full-fledged psula. The case that the pasuk is talking about, both in the case of the onus and the mefata, is specifically talking about a psula. If she's b'ula already, if she's had relations before, then the whole din doesn't apply. So we have to be talking about, that's why the Mishnah is stressing that these people were freed or converted or what have you below 3 years old. So that way we consider them to be a b'sula in halacha. And by the way, the Melechus Shlomo says this is the reason why b'chlal, he says, why does this whole concept of onus and mefata come into our masecht anyway? Okay, it has to be somewhere in Seder Nashim, but why epis and k'sulas? He says basically because it's the continuation of, in the first parak we talked about these cases in relation to the k'sula, and we made a distinction between below three and above three. So similarly over here, we're talking about the din, how it relates to them as far as onus and mefata.
So the gyuris is below three, the same case we saw in the previous parak?
In the first parak.
Yeah,
that since it was below three, then even though we generally assume that the goyim were promiscuous, and therefore if she was above three, we have reason to suspect that she may have had relations and lost her psulim. But if she was below three, then we assume in halacha they grow back, and therefore she can be considered a psula.
But in terms of ear,
we learned in the first parak that the geir katan matbilin oizal das based in. And we said that when she becomes bas mitzvah, she has the option to be moicha, to decide whether she wants to stay a Jew or not. And actually, we said in the first parak that for that reason, that any knas that she's supposed to be getting, we're actually going to put an escrow until she becomes bas mitzvah and agrees that she wants to stay a Jew, and then she's entitled to it. Otherwise, since under goyish law she's not entitled to it, we don't want her getting it then. Yeah.
This is interesting. We are talking about after bas mitzvah.
No, no, the onus and mefata took place after bas mitzvah. Right. Well, that's right. That's the Gemara I talked over there about. We are going to see later in our perek that there's machloikus whether these dinim apply to a ktana as well. Or do they only apply to a naira?
Well, the pashtus not.
Actually, we're going to have right here at the beginning of the Gemara, come to think of it.
Naira is different, but...
Okay, so the Gemara had said over there that says, kivin she gilu shah achas, that there can be the short period of time between when she becomes a naira and when she has the chance to be moicha. We talked about that in the first parak, the possibilities that maybe you have to wait until you see that she's been noyig as a Jewish woman for a certain period of time, and therefore there's a couple of days leeway over there. Well, we talked about the possibility that maybe the dinim of when a person is considered an adult, la halacha, are different for Jews versus for goyim. No, she was converted at less than 3 years old. The oinus or pitri took place after 12. So it took place after 12, we're saying. Third group, habal achoisa, if a person has relations with a sister, bal achoisa aviv, or his father's sister, bal achoisa imo, or his mother's sister, bal achoisa ishta, his wife's sister, bal eishas achiv, his brother's wife, bal eishas achi aviv, his father's brother's wife, bal anida, or the girl is a nida. In all those cases, also yeshla and knas, they all have a knas. Even though achal pishen be koris, even though all this last group, beginning with the sister, he's chayav koris for relations with them. Nevertheless, ain ban Mrs. based in, but there is no Mrs. based in, and therefore, and that's not, the chorus is not powerful enough to exempt him from having to pay. That's the point that we're going to start talking about in the Gemara, we're going to start talking about tomorrow, about kam lebe didab amine. Kam lebe didab amine basically means, it literally means that he stands with the greater thing. So meaning, if you have, for example, we've talked about this briefly before, but our parak is going to be the main place in one of the main places in Shas where it talks about this concept. If you have, for example, a person, let's say, shoots somebody else and kills him, and at the same time as he's shooting him through his clothes, so he's also damaged his clothes. Do you say he's going to be chayav misa for the shooting? Is he also going to have to pay for the clothes? We say no. Kam lebe didab amine, we give him the harsher punishment. The fact that he's getting misa patters him exempts him from having to pay the money. What we're saying over here in the Mishnah, and we're going to point out in the Gemara that this is a controversial thing, is that does not apply to kares. So if he did something which makes him chayav kares, and at the same time did something else that makes him liable to money, he is going to get karis and he's going to have to pay the money. That's the point we're saying over here, that even though, for example, it was a sister, where he's chayav karis for relations with her, nevertheless, he's also going to be chayav to pay the money.
Why is karis different?
We're going to learn. We'll start talking about it tomorrow.
So malchus is more chamor than
karis. Malchus we haven't gotten to. That's another thing the Gemara is going to get to. When we say, just come live, did it apply to Mrs. Basin, or does it also apply to malchus? We'll get to all this. We'll have several
What's
days.
The logic? Why is karis different than Mrs.?
So the logic basically is that the one thing is, first of all, I mean, we're going to learn it from Sukkim, actually, but one logical reason might be Mrs. Bastin, the Gemara talks about this in Makos, actually, Mrs. Bastin you can't get out of. Even if the person does tshuva, Bastin still can't rely on, they can't look into his heart and see that he genuinely did tshuva. They're going to have to execute him no matter what. So therefore, he's going to get that punishment no matter what. Whereas when it comes to Karis, if he does tshuva, then he's going to be potter from Karis. Hashem yiro le'inayim, Hashem yiro le'leva, the Eved sees the heart, and therefore, so you don't want him to get off scot-free after all, so then there's more reason to say that he should have to pay.
In today's time, there's no
one. That's a different matter. When we're going to talk about whether kam lebe didab amine applies specifically if he's actually going to get executed, or is it even if it's a case where he's chayev Mrs. Bastin, even though it's not actually going to be carried out. We'll be getting to all this over the next few days. Yeah. So the Gemara starts out, what do you mean? Hani naris psulis islu knas kshiris loy? What are you implying? That only the posala girls mentioned in the Mishnah, the mamzeres, the sina, etc., only they have a knas, not a regular kosher girl, a regular Jewish girl? No, hakakama. Elu naris psulis yeshlam knas. What it means is, they're the following girls who are posala. You, even though they're apostle, nevertheless they have a knas. Habal hamamzeras falan a sin of alakosis. Oh, when we said in the Mishnah, by the way, when we said one of the ones we had in the Mishnah was Eishes Achiv, his brother's wife. Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi the obvious question: if it's his brother's wife, why is he chayav a knas anyway? As a mitzvah of Yibum. And we learned in Yevamah that Habal Yevim Tov, if he has relations with a Yevamah, b'shoygig with mezid, b'onus or whatever, it's still a valid Yibum. So what kind of knas are we talking about over here? And the answer is that we're talking about that the brother, we should be talking about a few possibilities. One is that the brother is dead, but he had another wife and he had children with her. Therefore, as we learned many times in Yevamos, there's no issue, there's no zika over here, there's no yibum to be done, and therefore you still have the regular isser of his brother's wife, the regular isser karis. Another possibility is he divorced her, and then again there's no zika of yibum. One other thing, Tosfos points out, we would have to be talking about again, because all the cases in our Mishnah, we have to be talking about that the girl is a bzula. How is she his brother's wife? Then obviously it has to be that he only did eder sin and then he died or divorced her. Otherwise, she wouldn't be a bzula anymore. All right. So the Mishnah continued. Naira ain't ktana loy. The Mishnah had mentioned a naira, elu naira shiashlan knas, but not a ktana, not when she's below bas mitzvah. Man tana, which tana is it that makes that distinction? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav Meir. That would be according to Rav Meir. The Tanya, ktanim b'mas yom echad b'chitavi shtei sairus, a little girl from when she's a day old until she grows two hairs, which is a sign that she became a gdola, that she became a naira. Yesh lo mecher. The father is able to sell her as an Oma Hevriya, as a Jewish maidservant. The Ein lo knas, but there's no knas if somebody does onus or pituri to her, then he doesn't pay the knas. Umishatavi shtei sairus vachitivga, from shtei sairus until she becomes a begeris, which is 6 months. Yes, it's the other way around. Yesh lo knas ve'ein lo mecher. She does have a knas. If onus appeared for onus appeared, but there's no mecha, the father at that point can't sell her as a shif as an Oma Hevri anymore. And it actually points out from the Gemara in Erchin explains what the logic is. We know the pasuk says by an Oma Hevriya, the yotza chinam ein kasef, that she goes out for free without any money. And Rashi explains over there that it means that an Oma Hevriya leaves her service, she can go free when she has shteisairus, when she reaches puberty. So if even though before she was an Oma Hevriya and she goes free at that point, how much more so the father can't first sell her at that point. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Shehayu Rav Meir Omer, because Rav Meir said here's the general rule: kol makom sheyesh mecher ein knas, v'chol makom sheyesh knas ein mecher. It's one or the other. Either the father has the right to sell her as an Oma Hevriya, or there's the knas, which, as we'll learn later in the parak, goes to him. Actually, in the next parak, we'll learn goes to him. But you can never have both. There's no period in her lifetime when he's able to sell her and able to receive a knas for her. No, the Chum say, "Ktanim about shalosh shanim yem echad about shetivga yesh laknas." The Chum say, from 3 until she becomes a begeris, there is a knas, meaning the whole time she's a ktana. Well, not the whole time, but from age 3 again, when he is considered significant in halacha, until she becomes a begeris, yesh laknas. Then there is a knas. The question is, what knas ein mechaloi? What are the Chachamim implying? That during that time he can receive a knas if there was onus or pituri, but he can't sell her. Of course, he can sell her as a ktana. No. What the Braisa means is af knas v'mokem mecher. The Chacham was saying that yes, there is that overlap period over there. There is that time from 3. There is that time from 3 until 12 where you have both. He'll receive the knas, and there will also be mecher. He can also sell her as an Amar Ivriya. So again, according to the Chachamim, then it comes out that a ktana would receive a knas. Whereas Rav Meir says not, our Mishnah, when it mentions Elu Nairus, in the coins of Rav Meir. And it actually points out, by the way, when the Chachamim said from 3 until Begeris, they didn't mean to imply that he can't sell her below 3. The point is, they're trying to talk about when you have both Mecher and Knas, that only begins at 3, because you don't have Knas below 3. What? Mecher is to be able to sell her as an Oma Hevri, as a Jewish maidservant. Okay. So yes, so the bottom line is that the Mishnah goes according to the mayor. Now the question is, Hani b'nei knas aninu? Why, in the cases in our Mishnah, in the first 3 cases, the mamzeres or nesina or kusis, why do they get a knas? Or even in the last cases, the sister, the aunt, etc. Why should they get a knas? V'amai ikri kan? Shouldn't we apply here the pasuk the loy tia leisha that she should be his wife, which that pasuk is talking about by an onus, which means isha haru'ya loy, only if she's fit to marry him, as we'll learn later in the parak, that in fact if she's also to marry him for any reason, daraisa or darabanan, then in fact even though the Torah is saying that he has a mitzvah to marry her, but that's overridden by other considerations. So that being the case, if you can't apply one part of the mitzvah, why are you applying the other part? Why are you making him pay the knas if he can't do the other part? Amar Rish Lakish, because the pasuk says twice naira by an onus. You have the expression like this. The Torah starts off, Ki yimtish naira b'sula, or tzvasa v'shacha b'imamim. So, v'nasana isha sheikha v'imalavi ha-naira. Now, you have as follows. First, you have the first time that it says naira, then the second time it says ha-naira. Now, first of all, the second time it didn't have to say the word at all. It could have just said v'nasana l'aviyah, you should give it to her father. So therefore, you have the extra word naira, and you have the extra hey before it. Which effectively then we have the equivalent of as if it said three times Nara. So, Chad Legufe, one we use just to understand that we're talking about a Naira in general. Chad Lasturi Chai Velav, and a second one comes to include the cases where she's also to him under a Lav, such as a Mamzeris. Chad Lasturi Chai Vekrisis, and one to include the last group in the Mishnah where he's Chai Vekaris, and where he can't marry her because of an Isser Karis, such as a sister or aunt or what have you, and yet he owes the Knas. Tosfos, by the way, quotes from Rabbi Hanano that actually we're not using two different words, Nara and Hanara. It's rather the fact that throughout this whole section, in the Torah, whenever the Torah talks about a Nara, a young girl, it always writes it. There's always a kriyuk siv over there. It's just in one place, which we'll learn about in the next paragraph. It's always a kriyuk siv. It's always written without the hey. It's always written nun ayin resh, as if it was to be pronounced Nahar, and we pronounce it Nara. There's only one place, which we'll learn about in the next parak, where the Torah actually spells out with the hey of Nara. So therefore, Rabbi Hananel says that what we're doing is that we daushin then, because the Torah could have written it Nahar without the hey, and it writes, so you have the word Nahar, you have the Nahara with the unexpressed hey that's pronounced but not written, and then you have Hanara. Tosfos says, though, that no, that doesn't mean so it means, in other words, that's what Rabbi Hananel says. That's what Tosfos says. Rabbi Hananel is saying that's the three Naras that we're talking about over here. Not that we have two, not like Rashi is saying that we have two different words, one Nara and one Hanara, and therefore that makes the equivalent of three because Hanara counts as two. No, it's the one word Hanara. We can break it down into three components. Na'ar, then we can tack on the hay, and then we can tack on the hay at the beginning. Tosfos says that no, because
what
the
fact. What would you say about the second Nara?
We're not using it, but Tosfos actually says that that's no good because, in fact, the fact of the matter is, by the case of the onus, it does not say na'ara with the full hay. If the Torah had actually written with the hay, then yeah, maybe. But like this, only earlier in that parak, by the case of Moitzi Shemra, that we'll learn about in the next parak, does it actually spell out na'ara with a hay? So therefore, that doesn't work. So Tosfos agrees with Rashi that we're talking about the two different words na'ara. One is na'ara, spelt without a hay. The other is hana'ara, spelt with an initial hey, meaning the, but not a final hey, and therefore that second one counts as two because it could have just said la'aviha and it didn't have to say the word na'ara in general. Having said that, it could have said na'ara and then it said hana'ara. Yeah. So we have one tells us a regular na'ara, the other two tell us chai v'lavin and chai v'krisis.
Why didn't they just like Rashi?
Did Rabbi Hananel know of Rashi even? I mean, maybe, I don't know. They lived about the same time. So I don't know if Rabbi Hananel even knew Rashi's explanation. Rapapa Amar, you have a different set of words that we can learn the same thing. Besula, besulois, habesulois. By the case of Mefata, you also have where the Torah repeats the word besula. V'chi yifata ish besula, asher lo yarasa. And what does he do if he doesn't want to marry her, or if her father doesn't want to marry him or off to him? Ketef yishko kamar habesulois. So again, you have the first word besula, and then you have the word habesulois, where again it could have just said ketef yishko kamoihar, according the you pay according to the value of ksuba. It says it could have said kamar habesulois. It says kamar habesulois. So again, you have the equivalent of three words. So therefore, again, Chad Legufe, one teaches us the basic concept that a besula, that a regular girl who is a besula, the dinim of fata applies, and you pay the knas. V'chad la'asuri chai v'lavin, v'chad la'asuri chai v'krisis, and the other two include the chai v'lavin, the mamzeres, the nesina, and the chai v'krisis, the sister and aunt, and so forth. But Rapapa, my time alone, Rish Lakish. Okay, why doesn't Rapapa want to use Rish Lakish's limud from Nara Hanara? The answer is, he says, because he says you need at least one of those words, Nara, You need the word hanara for a different purpose, for what Abaya says. Damar Abaya, ba'ala umesa, if he had relations with her, and then later on she died before the case came to Beis Din, then he's potter. He's potter from paying. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'nasan lavi hanara, it says he should give the father of the girl, lavi nara, v'lo lavi mesa, which implies that she has to be the same girl that she was before. So not if she's dead. So we need the word hanara for that. You don't have it available to teach us about chayv elavin and chayv krisis. Better to use the word habesolis for that. Rish Lakish, my time alayam akura papa. Okay, then why doesn't Rish Lakish use your papa's pasuk about habesolis? He says, ahumi boi l'gzeir shava. He says, because you need the word habesolis for a different purpose, for gzeir shava. The Tanya, as we learn in Braisa, when the pasuk, we learned this in the first parak, when the pasuk says, kesef yishko kamor habesolis, that he should pay money according to the dowry, according to the ksuba of besolis, what does that teach us? Shehei zeh kamor habesolis umor habesolis kazeh. It teaches us that the amount that he pays the amount that he pays should be the same as the ksuba of a basula. It should be the same amount, and conversely, that the moha, the ksuba of a basula, should be the same kind of coins. Because what are we talking about when it comes to when it comes to the mafate, when it comes to the mafate in parshas mishpatim, the Torah doesn't actually spell out the amount that he pays. It just says kesef yishko kamor habasulas. By the oynes in Parshas Kisetze, there it actually says that he should give chamishim koses, that he should give 50 silver coins. So what we do is, by combining the two psukim, we see as follows. By the oynes, then, we learn an amount, 50. By the mafata, it says yishko, melosh shkolim. So therefore, we learn that it's shkolim. 50 shkolim equal to... It could be dinarim. It could be zuzim, for example. It could be 50 dinarim. There are four dinar or zuz to the shekel. So therefore, what we're saying is we learn from this kesef yishkel kamer absolos, the amount that the mafata pays is the same as is paid in the other case of the sola, namely the oynes, which is fifty shkolim, 200 zuz. And in turn, how do we know that the 50, 200 of something, and then how do we know that it's 200 shkolim and not 200 zuz or whatever? We learn from yishkel. So by putting those two, but we need the word habsulis for that gzeir shava. So therefore, you don't have it available to teach us anything about chayv elavin and chayv krisis. Yeah, that's the question. So Rish Lakish nami mboilei l'chedavai, v'rapapa nami mboilei l'gzeir shava. Nu, after all, doesn't Rish Lakish need to learn Abaya's din about if she died, and doesn't Rish Lakish need to learn, and doesn't Rapapa need to learn gzeir shava about the ksuba? And about the pay and about the amount and the currency of payment. So according to both of them, you end up with a problem. The answer is Ella. No, shita kroy ksivi. Let's combine everything together. Altogether, you have six words: nara, nara, hanara, b'sula, b'sula, habsulis. So combining them together as follows. And the fact is that we can learn one from the other. We're going to learn throughout the parak that there's a number of dinim. There's a number of dinim that we learn from one to the other. So we have six altogether. Shrei legufayu. Two of them we need to teach us the actual din, the basic din that a naira basula has a knas in the case of onus, in the case of pitri. Chav chadabaya, one we use for Abaya's din, one word nara we use for Abaya's din, that she has to still be alive. Mechav l'gzeir shava, one we use for the gzeir shava about kesef yishko kamar rabsolis. Iyatrule trei. So therefore, you have two words left over. One nara and one basula, let's say. Chav l'asuya chayv elavin, v'chav l'asuya chayv krisis. So one tells us that it includes chayv elavin, the other one includes chayv krisis. So we're saying, in other words, in the end, that Rapapa and Rish Lakish are not really arguing. Each one is bringing a different set of words that we're using, but we actually need to combine them all together in order to each of them agrees that the other one's words are also being used towards this limud. And Tosfos points out, by the way, you know, that the whole problem that got us into this first place, why are we saying that we even need a pasuk for the chayv elavin and chayv krisis? Only because the pasuk used the expression v'lo tiel isha, that she has to be his wife. Why did the pasuk bother saying that in the first place? Don't say v'lo tiel isha. Don't need the six psulas and nairus, and you're home free. And the answer is Tosfos says because after all we do need the word v'lo tiel isha for a different limud. We need it to for one thing, Tosfos points out that for one thing we need it to learn the din that midaita, that when we say v'loitiyah le'isha, it doesn't mean that she marries him even if it's against her will. It can be against his will in the case of an onus, but it always has to be with her consent. V'loitiyah le'isha midaita, that it can only be with her consent. If we didn't have the word v'loitiyah le'isha, we wouldn't know that. And in fact, every so often you come across You know what? You can find online every so often when you have in various places where people argue against the Torah. One of their favorite arguments is, look, you see, what does the Torah say? And that if a man rapes a woman, then she's forced to marry him. But that's not what it's saying. We understand from the law of the Isha, that's not so. Of course, she's never forced into anything. But that's, we need the pasuk. Otherwise, we need the pasuk to tell us that.
Have it explicitly.
Yeah. Yeah. There's other ideas in it. There's other ideas about it also about what we need v'lo tiyah le'isha for. One idea is, according to the opinion of Reb Meir that we said before, that it can't be a ktana. It's also based on that idea because v'lo tiyah le'isha implies that she should be somebody who's capable of contracting a marriage. When she's a ktana, only her father can for her. You can't really say v'lo tiyah le'isha. She's not really capable of entering into a marriage yet. No, but that's the thing. The Loi Tiyah Le'isha is also teaching us that idea, according to that a Ktana has no Knas, because you can't say the Loi Tiyah Le'isha in that case. It also includes the idea, for example, that's the point. Because it says Loi Tiyah Le'isha, that's one idea why we're saying that the din dafka applies to a Nara and not a Ktana.
And with a Ktana, just what happens then?
So according to that, we said before that there's a machlokes of Meir and the Chachamim about that. According to the Chachamim, there still is a knas. The usual rules of onus and mafata apply. According to the Chachamim, not. No, not midrabanan midaraisa. No. According to the Chachamim, who disagreed with Reb Meir, the dinim of onus and mafata, the dinim of the knas and the marriage and whatever, apply equally well whether she's a ktana or a naira.
Right.
According to Reb Meir, not. According to Reb Meir, it only applies when she's a naira.
I imagine it was a pialacha, according to what the Gemara is saying, but in reality, even back in those days, there was prison sentences that's not included in the halacha.
That may well also be, yeah.
If someone hits someone or does something to them, they went to jail. They got locked up.
No, I don't know. I mean, in general, we don't find jail in halacha, but I would hardly be surprised.
The police, the authorities.
But we're not talking about
it.
Doesn't pertain to our mission.
No, okay, right. I mean,
no, it does, because it's the same thing. We're talking
about
the mission applies to everything, back then to today. Back then, besides for punishments that were done by Bezdin, the punishment was done by the police authority.
Maybe.
So you shouldn't think that we're some sort of a wacky, if you rape someone, you get to marry, and that guy went to jail. And he got fisted with the
authorities. Yeah, he's mentioning the side thing. Right,
we're
mentioning another side thing.
We're talking law.
Again, you know, it's also not to say, for example, that the guy wouldn't have the father sneaking up behind him with a gun, and you know, and yeah.
Otherwise, that's what would happen.
Yeah. Okay. Now, when we say in our Mishnah, then again, that when we're saying in the Mishnah that a mamzeres or nesina or a sister, etc., gets a knas. This is Ula Puki Mahai Tana. This comes to tell us not that the Mishnah holds not like the following Tana, the Tanya. When the Pasuk says, V'loi Tiyah Le'isha, that she should be his wife, Shimon HaTimni Yomu Isha Shiyesh V'Havaya. So Shimon HaTimni says that means it only applies to a woman who Kiddushin would be Tofus, who he would be capable of doing Kiddushin with. As opposed to, for example, the Chayva Krisa. Well, in other words, that Kiddushin would be Tofus.
Right.
Yeah. Rav Shimon Ben Menachya Yomu Isha Ru'u L'Kaima. Rav Shimon Menasya says it means that it has to be the kind of woman who he would be allowed to stay married to. So the question is, my binayu, what do we mean? What's the practical distinction between them? What kind of case would one say is included and the other one not? Now Rashi points out over here, by the way, Shimon HaTimni himself, we learned in Yevamos, and we're going to be going over it over here also, that there is a multi-way machlokas. What cases are Kedushin Tofus and not Tofus? We had Shimon HaTzimni had said, we had Rabbi Yeshua over there who said that only Chayve Mis is based in, is Kiddush and not Tofus, but anything short of that, even Chayve Krisis it is. We had Shimon HaTzimni saying that Krisis or Mis is based in. We had two different understandings of Rabbi Akiva, which we're going to talk about over here, Rabbi Yesheva and Rabbi Akiva playing, whether it's also Chayve Lavin or even Chayve Esse. So Shimon HaTzimni himself, the thing is, Shimon HaTzimni himself in the Mishnah there in Yevamos holds that Kiddushin are Tofus by Chayve Lavin, just not by Chayve Krisis. The question is, when we say over here, when Shimon HaTzimni over here is expressing that the Pasuk V'loitzi Le'isha means that you're capable of doing Kiddushin with her, and Rav Shimon Menasi is saying that it's talking about a woman who you're allowed to stay married to, What we're asking is, according to Rav Shimon, what is Rav Shimon Menasya, what is he excluding from what Shimon HaTzimni is saying? The answer is, Amar Rav Zera, Mamzeras, and Nesina, Yekabinayu. The difference between them would be the Mamzeras and Nesina of our Mishnah. L'manda, Amar Yesh Bahavaya, according to Shimon HaTzimni, that the operative thing is whether Kiddushin or Tofus, well then, Honami Yesh Bahavaya. You can do kiddushin with a mamzeres and nesina. The kiddushin are tofus. You do have to give her a get, and she is considered an eshes ish. You're just not allowed to stay married to her based on a force you to get divorced. L'manda amar ru'uya l'kaima, whereas according to Rav Shimon ben Menasya, that has to be a ru'uya l'kaima, that you're allowed to stay married to her. Well then, ha'in ru'uya l'kaima. A mamzeres and nesina, you're not allowed to stay married to.
You're allowed to marry her, according to him?
No, not you're allowed to. You're also to marry a mamzeres. If you do, you're over on a lav, you'd be chayav malchus.
Right.
But the kedushin are tofus. You are going to have to give her a get. Yeah. As opposed to, for example, what Shimon HaTzimni is saying is, his opinion, again, remember, is that chayav krisis or Mrs. Bastin, kedushin is not tofus, and this is the halacha. If a person were to be Makadish, his sister, he doesn't need to give her a get. Nothing happened. So that's the difference. Then we're talking about when our Mishnah is saying that the Mamzeres and the Sinner gets a knas, that could be according to Shimon HaTzimni. It wouldn't be according to Shimon Menasya.
Because he holds the Chayve Lavin also.
Because that's the thing. Rav Shimon Menasya is not talking about whether Kedushin are Tofus or not. He's talking about maybe Kedushin are Tofus being allowed to stay married to her. He's saying the operative thing is, when do we say you Chayve Knas in a case where you would be allowed to stay married to this woman? So not only Kedushin are Tofus, but that basically wouldn't force you to get divorced. And in the case of a Mamzeres or Nesina, that's not the case. Okay.
What was
Rav Shimon Menasya didn't say anything in Yevamos. Shimon HaTzimni in Yevamos is the one that said is the one that said that when is there no havaya, when a kedushin not tofus by Krisus and Mrs. Bastin.
What's the point of saying that if you stay with her and also.
He's not allowed to divorce her. In the case of an onus, he's not allowed to divorce her anyway. But what we're saying is, since the Torah is saying you have to pay the knaf, in addition, he has to marry her, and he's never allowed to divorce her. What Shimon HaTzimni is saying is, if it's a woman that he was onus is somebody who is also who is somebody not who he's also to marry, who kedushin are not tofus in, such as his sister, then the whole concept of knaf doesn't apply.
Right, but why?
Right. Why? Because it all goes as a unit. If it can't be Veloiti Elisha, then if it can't be Veloiti Elisha, then the rest of it doesn't apply either. Is there a sakazu?
Damage is done.
Okay, but according to Rav Shimon Menasya, the idea is that not only kedushin have to be tofus, but you would be allowed to marry her in the first place. So not a mamzeres, for example. Okay, what about Rav Akiva? Domain kedushin tofus and b'chayve lavin. What about according to Rav Akiva, who says that, as we learned in Yevamos, that kedushin are not tofus b'chayve lavin either? May binayu. Then what would be the difference between understanding whether v'loitia le'isha means that you're able to do kedushin versus allowed to stay married? What's a case where you would be able to, where kedushin would be tofus, but you're not allowed to stay married? The answer is ikibinayu amon alakayin gadol. The difference would be in the case of an almona and a kohen gadol. Or actually the same would be with a grusha to a regular kohen. Rashi says.
An almona can't be allowed. It's only a...
No. Amon of Fenzad is alive. Amon of Grusha Vachalol is only an Eser Leyukach. Ba'ula is only an Eser. That we're going to get to soon. And this would be Kirab Simoy. The Tanya, Rab Simoy Yomer. Min HaKol Oyser Rab Akiva Mamzerin. Rab Simoy explains that Rab Akiva holds that any relation that is Oser, Min HaTorah, the children from it would be Mamzerin. Chutz Me Amon of a Kohen Gadol, except for an Amon with a Kohen Gadol, or Rashi says also a Grusha with a Kohen Hedit. Because the Torah says in that case, he shouldn't marry them, and he should not be mechalal. He should not desecrate his children, make them chalalim. Which implies, chilul and wois, aveinois and mamzer, and implies that he only makes his children a chalal by marrying an almano, a grusha, or what have you, but not a mamzer. Yes. So far, in other words, we have, according to Rabbi Akiva, you have as follows. Any case where you're also under a lav to marry a woman, then according to Rabbi Akiva, kedushin are not tofus, except in the case of the marriages that are also to kohenim, an almana to a kohen gadol or grusha, etc., to a kohen hedyet. So kedushin, according to Rabbi Akiva, kedushin are not tofus in those cases. But according to Rabbi Akiva, kedushin are tofus in those cases. But you're not allowed to stay married. So there we go. If you say that lo tzir le'isha means isha sheyesh b'havaya, there is havaya. There's no havaya. There is havaya over here. Kedushin are tofus. He says the children are not mamzerim; they're only chalolim. But if you say isha ru'uy l'kaima, that he's allowed to stay married to, he's not allowed to stay married to the almono or grusha. So that would be the difference in the understanding. What? Right, the sons would be chalolim. They would be chalolim, but they would not be mamzerim according to this opinion. Right. Okay. What about another possibility? Or Rabbi Yesheva? What about according to Rabbi Yesheva's understanding of Rabbi Akiva? Da'amar, that he says, "Boyu unetzaveach al Akiva ben Yosef. Come, let's cry out against Akiva ben Yosef." He says that any case where you're not allowed to marry a woman, where you're not allowed to have relations with a woman, the child would be a mamzer, which means that he's including even the case of Amon of the Kohen Gadol, and that's why he's saying, let's protest against Rabbi Akiva. He's creating so many mamzerim. He's saying, any case where the Torah forbids you to marry a woman, then the children are going to be a mamzerim. And he says that's going too far. So according to him, you're back to the question, where do you have a case, according to Rabbi Yesheva's understanding, where kedushin are toifus, and the child would not be a mamzer, therefore, but you're not allowed to stay married to her. Again, according to him, even the case of the kohenim would not be that way. The answer is, he would say, it could be nayu chayva esem mitzvah adomi. He would say that the difference between the two understandings of a loyti and isha is the cases where you're only also under an esem. For example, a mitzvah adomi, we learned about this in Yevamos, that a mitzvah male or female convert, or an adomi male or female convert, is also to marry into the Jewish people up to three generations, meaning the convert himself and his children, his grandchildren already are allowed to freely intermarry with the Jewish people. Now, the Torah never actually spells out, the Torah never actually says, don't marry an adomi or a mitzvah within three generations. It just says, children of theirs from the third generation are allowed to Yavei Lahem B'Kal Hashem, are allowed to enter into the Jewish people. So it's a lav abon b'kal eser. We derive a prohibition from the fact that Torah is telling us what to do. That has the status of an eser. An eser is less serious than a lois eser.
An indirect eser.
It's an indirect lois eser. It's a direct eser. It's a direct eser. It's an indirect lois eser. So it's considered an eser. So therefore, even according to Rabbi Yesheva's understanding of Rabbi Akiva, those people, the child of a person who marries a mitzri or a domi would not be a mamzer. So there you have a case where kedushin are tofus, with the first or second generation mitzri or domi, and the children are not mamzerim, but you're not allowed to stay married to them.
And they're not mamzerim again because it's only an eser.
Yeah. Now, though, the question is, hanichal Rabbi Shevav, okay, we can understand that that's what Rabbi Shevav means. Ila puki mitaima dirab simoi ka'asi. If he's just coming to exclude, if he's coming to contradict what Rabbi Simoi is saying, shapir, then we can understand that very well. In other words, Rabbi Simoi had said that Rabbi Akiva holds that the almon of the kohen gadol is not a mamzer. Rabbi Shevav is contradicting in that and says, no, my understanding is Rabbi Akiva holds even in that case the child's a mamzer. Shapir, good. Then we can make that distinction that Rabbi Shevav would make a distinction would. Would would hold that Rabbi Akiva is making a distinction between an essay and a lois essay.
But it's not.
Ella, itanim ed nafshei kalmar. But if Rabbi Yosheva was just saying an independent statement, kol she'im lebiya b'Yisrael avlad mamzer, and he's saying anybody who there's no, you're not allowed to do bia have lad mamzer, then the child's a mamzer, which implies v'afilu chayve essay, which implies even the chayve essay, even the mitzri adomi. Well, then my benayu. Then what are we? Then now we're really stuck. Where do we have a case? We're kiddushin our tofus, but you're not allowed to stay married. According to this way of understanding Rabbi Sheva, every case where you're offered to get married, then kiddushin are not tofus, and the children are mamzerim.
So how can we understand that according to Rabbi Sheva when he says, "Oy, Rabbi Akiva"?
No, he's saying boyu netzaveach al Akiva ben Yosef. He's saying my understanding of Rabbi Akiva is that he's going to the nth degree. He's saying that any case where you're offered to get married, the children are mamzerim. Even Kohen Gadol, even Amon Kohen Gadol, even Chayve Eser. So where do we have left a case? Where do we have left a case where, according to Rabbi Sheva's understanding of Rabbi Akiva, according to this way of understanding Rabbi Sheva's understanding of Rabbi Akiva, that you're not a mamzer, but you're not allowed to stay married.
And that's the case.
That's what we're asking. And the answer is, Ikibinayu Ba'ula L'Kohen Gadol. Still, you could say the difference is, if the Kohen Gadol marries a woman who's already had relations previously, which that is an eser, that because there it's also a lot of what we call eser, because the Torah says, "Behu ishu b'psila yikach," that you should marry a girl who is a b'sula, which implies he's not allowed to marry a b'ula, but again, it's considered an eser. Well, maishna, and so what would we say? According to Rabbi Sheva, why would we say that that's different? Why would he say that Rabbi Akiva exempts that one case? The reason is, d'havala eser, she'ena shava b'kol, because that is an eser that does not apply generically to the whole Jewish people.
Only to the Kohen Gadol.
Only to the Kohen Gadol. The mitzvah in Adonai applies to everybody.
So
this doesn't.
So the almana and the grusha for the Kohen Gadol is just...
But that's a lav. That's a lav.
So
what we're saying is there's several different gradations over here. You have chayve mitzvah based, then you have chayve krisis, you have chayve lavin that apply to everybody, chayve lavin that don't apply to everybody, only to Kohenim, chayve esser that apply to everybody, and Chayve Esser that only apply to the Kohen Gadol.
And the only Esser that applies to the Kohen Gadol is this one?
Is this one, the Bula. And therefore, so we're saying, that's the last possibility we have. According to this second understanding of how Rabbi Yosheva is understanding Rabbi Akiva, you would say that you still have two possible ways. You still have Shimon HaTimni and Rabbi Shimon Menachi's two different ways of learning the Pasuk V'loitzi Yelisha. Are we saying that the Knas applies in a case where he's able to marry her, where Kedushin are Tofus? Then yes, Kedushin are Tofus over here, even according to this understanding. But if it depends on whether he's allowed to stay married to her, well, he's not allowed to. Now, the last question with that is, if she's a ba'ula, then if we're talking ba'ula, the Kohen Gadol, then how is it relevant to the whole thing of knas here anyway? The whole point is, we said that knas only applies to a ba'ula. So Rashi says, you can have a case where she was ba'ula shaloi kadarka, where the relations that she had were shaloi kadarka, and therefore, so she's also to the Kohen Gadol, the same issur applies, we learned about that in Yevamos, but as far as knas, that depends whether she ever had relations in the normal way. Tosfos says a different possibility. You could have, suppose we're talking about it, but you know that the Kohen Gadol himself was did onus or pituri to a girl. He's also to marry her afterwards because it's called Ba'ulas Atzmo. He himself made her no longer a b'sula. He's also to marry her. They'll give him Malkus, but he's still the Kohen Gadol, yeah. But So she gets a knas because he's the one himself who made her no longer a b'sula, but he's not allowed to marry her because she's now a b'ula. She's a b'ula from him himself, but that doesn't change the fact.
Yeah.
Good.
It's a part of our big